Brought to you by Thomas Allgaier and Furness, this edition highlights key LinkedIn posts on social selling in weeks 17 and 18. Furness supports clients with identifying target attendees for events, crafting outreach that cuts through the noise, and driving qualified registrations through strategic LinkedIn engagement. You can find more info in the description.
You know, it's imagine analyzing over 7 million LinkedIn posts.
Right.
Only to discover that the algorithm is basically actively hiding your content because you are, well, too interesting.
Right, which sounds completely backwards.
Yeah.
But welcome to the deep dive, everyone. Today, we're really unpacking the absolute top social selling trends we've seen across LinkedIn, specifically from calendar weeks 17 and 18.
Yeah, and the reality of what it actually takes to build pipeline on this platform right now is, I mean, it's incredibly counterintuitive.
It really is. And just to set expectations, we're tailoring this specifically for you, the B2B marketing professional. So no fliff. We're just getting into the smart mechanical breakdown of what is actually working today.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because let's be real. If you don't understand the rules of the environment you're operating in, you're essentially just, you know, shouting into a void.
Yeah, a very crowded void.
Right. And to understand those rules, we really have to look at Richard Vanderbloom's massive data analysis. He looked at, like we mentioned, 7 million posts since 2020.
Which is just an insane amount of data.
It's massive. And his main takeaway is that the algorithm is ruthlessly prioritizing a very narrow niche focus right now.
Okay, so define narrow.
Well, basically, if you stray outside of, say, three core topics, your reach just gets throttled.
Wow. Okay, so it feels like the algorithm is, it's like a strict bouncer at a networking event, right?
That's a good way to put it.
Like, it only lets you in the room if you agree to talk to the exact same three people about the exact same topic all night. But, I mean, what if you genuinely want to mingle? What if your actual value comes from having a lateral perspective?
Well, that's the thing. It's a brilliant mechanism if you're a machine trying to categorize data.
Mm-hmm.
There's a terrible experience if you are, you know, a multidimensional human being.
Yeah, exactly.
And Frank Panzer actually posted a really visceral reaction to this data. He said this forced categorization literally gives him a stomachache.
A stomachache. I mean, I get it.
Yeah, because he has these broad interests, right? Like democratic education, dementia care, children's education.
All really important topics.
Absolutely. Mm. But the second he tries to use his platform to support those causes, the algorithm just, it gets confused about his semantic cluster. And it actively penalizes his professional reach.
That is so frustrating because if I'm, say, a marketing strategist, my insights might come from, I don't know, studying psychology or architecture.
Mm-hmm.
But if I engage with those, I get punished.
I think that frustration is pretty universally felt right now.
Yeah.
But, and this is important, if we dig into the why behind this algorithm shift, it actually starts to make sense from a business perspective.
Okay, how so?
So Nazrin Panjuda and Anika Schiller both pointed out that the platform is fundamentally shifting away from vanity metrics.
So less focus on just raw likes and broad impressions.
Exactly. The algorithm is now obsessively tracking time spent on posts. It's measuring dwell time. Like, are people actually stopping their scroll? Are they clicking see more?
Right. So quality and like the depth of the relationship signal is beating broad quantity.
That's it. It's essentially measuring friction.
Friction. I like that. So if someone stops the scroll and reads a deeply technical post on a highly specific topic, the algorithm says, okay, this isn't viral fluff. This is high value for this specific subset of users.
Right. Which sounds great in theory, but, you know, people are clever.
Oh, yeah. They always find a loophole.
Exactly. If dwell time is the new currency, people are going to game that metric. Thomas Thaler actually issued a very sharp warning about this. He's seeing creators fabricate controversial facts or, like, exaggerated stories simply to write a hook.
Just to force users to stop scrolling?
Yeah. They're gaming the dwell time metric with friction-heavy fiction.
Wow. Friction-heavy fiction. That's a great phrase.
And Harold Shermer took the critique even further. He noted that the algorithm isn't just trying to improve quality, it's actively squeezing organic reach so hard that creators and companies are basically forced to pay for sponsored reach.
So it's an intentional push to turn the feed into an advertising catalog.
Basically.
Which means relying purely on algorithmic reach is a really dangerous game for a B2B strategy.
Very dangerous.
But, okay, here's the catch. Even if you do manage to appease the bouncer, let's say you get past the algorithm, that doesn't actually close deals. When someone finally sees your post and decides to click on your face, what happens next?
This is such a critical pivot. Carolina Posma shared a hard truth about this recently.
Yeah.
Your profile is not a resume. It is a landing page.
Yes, I love that.
It's a foundational mindset shift. She noted that 80% of leads check your profile before they ever reply to your outreach.
80%. That's huge.
Right. Think about the psychology of a B2B buyer. They're risk averse. Before they give you 15 minutes of their calendar, they want to verify that you're legitimate.
They want to know you actually understand their world and aren't going to waste their time.
Exactly.
And yet, if you look at most profiles, you know, the banner is that default gray and blue constellation graphic.
Oh, the worst.
Right. And the about section starts with, like, passionate about innovation and driven by results.
Which, let's be honest, is just white noise. It means absolutely nothing.
It creates friction where there should be clarity. And Martin Holtz explicitly advised B2B professionals to just permanently ban the word passionate from their profile openers.
I fully support that ban. Your profile format needs to be a functional tool that matches your operational goals. Like, a marketing coordinator's profile shouldn't read like a visionary founder's.
Right, and a founder shouldn't have a profile that looks like they are actively hunting for a mid-level management job.
Precisely. And Rake Adler provided a highly actionable formula to fix the headline itself.
Yeah.
Clear value plus personality plus target audience and then optional social proof.
Okay, I understand the formula, but let me play devil's advocate for a second here.
Go for it.
If I'm a sales rep, I don't want to sound like a generic marketer, but I also don't want to sound like a desperate quota crusher. So what's the actual filter I should run my copy through before I hit publish?
That's a great question. And the sharpest filter for this actually comes from David J.P. Fisher.
Okay, what does he say?
He suggests sitting down and answering three highly specific questions before you touch a single word on your profile.
I'm listening.
First, what is your top professional goal right now? Like, is it booking meetings or is it getting recruited? Second, who is the exact group of people you need to influence to achieve that goal?
Okay, and the third?
Third, and this is the most critical one, what reputation do you want them to associate with you?
Oh, wow. That third question is everything. Because if the reputation you want is, say, trusted industry advisor, your featured section shouldn't be cluttered with six different links to your company's product demos.
Exactly. The profile is your digital storefront.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to do the heavy lifting of establishing trust long before you ever send a direct message.
Okay, so let's assume you've done the work. The digital storefront is optimized, the headline is sharp, the banner points to a clear single action.
You're ready for business.
Right, but you can't just sit behind the counter and wait for algorithmic foot traffic to wander in. You have to go out into the digital neighborhood.
Yes, you absolutely have to.
And Tiffany Spallnelli brought up a reality that I think terrifies a lot of content creators. She said posting alone makes you invisible.
It's so true. I think it is the single biggest misconception in modern B2B marketing. People think they can just broadcast their way to pipeline.
Because organic reach is capped. Like, even if you write an absolute masterpiece, the algorithm only shows it to a fraction of your own network.
Right.
So Tiffany pointed out that you need to be actively commenting on your prospects' posts. She actually advocates for a rhythm of 10 thoughtful comments a day, 5 days a week, for 90 days.
That's a serious commitment.
It is. But she argues that this alone will completely change a pipeline.
I believe it. Because commenting allows you to basically borrow reach while simultaneously building familiarity through these micro touch points.
Micro touch points, exactly.
Brenda Meller uses a really brilliant analogy for this. She calls LinkedIn Karma a checking account.
Oh, I like where this is going.
Yeah. You have to make deposits,
mm-hmm.
which means genuinely supporting others on their content long before you can ever make a withdrawal and ask for their business.
That makes total sense. And Michael Kerson is the perfect case study for this, right?
Oh, absolutely.
He attributes 299 booked meetings and over $2 million in pipeline strictly to his commenting strategy. Like, he uses it as his social first go-to-market pillar.
And for anyone unfamiliar with that jargon, a go-to-market pillar just means this isn't some cute side project for the marketing team.
Right. It's the primary strategic engine the entire business uses to acquire customers. Zero cold calls. Zero pulled emails. Just strategic commenting.
But, and I have to push back here a little, because we all see those terrible generic comments every day.
Oh, yeah. Great post. A great 100%.
Exactly. That is not networking. That is just loitering in the digital lobby.
It's worse than loitering. It actually damages your brand. Buyers just skim right past it or they actively block you.
This is where Jacqueline Sargent and Graham Riley's frameworks become incredibly valuable, especially for teams. Because if leadership just tells reps to go comment more, they end up copy-pasting that generic garbage.
Yeah, they need a system.
Right. Jacqueline and Graham outlined a specific architecture for what makes a comment actually convert.
I would assume it has to prove you actually read the post, for starters.
That's the baseline, yeah. The architecture starts with empathy validating the specific struggle the author just posted about. Then, you offer a mini example or a tactical tip from your own experience.
Okay, and then that?
Finally, you end with a pointed question that shows you deeply understand the nuance of their specific industry.
So the psychological goal of the comment is to create a what? Oh, wait, who is this? Moment in the prospect's mind.
Exactly. You want your comment to be so additive to the public conversation that they just naturally click your headshot.
And boom, they are on your optimized landing page. The funnel connects.
It's a beautiful thing when it works.
So you're dropping these architectural masterclass comments, you're borrowing reach, people are noticing, but eventually you have to move the conversation out of the public square and slide into the direct messages.
And this is where deals go to die, because people just rush it.
Oh, they rush it so badly. Louisa Balaniak was very firm about this. Pitch slapping is dead.
Good. And by pitch slapping, just to be clear, we mean that terrible practice of sending a connection request and the millisecond it's accepted.
Dropping a 5-paragraph automated pitch for a software demo.
Yes. It is the digital equivalent of handing a stranger a flyer on the street and immediately asking them to marry you.
It's so aggressive. And Louisa notes that it takes 4 to 6 months of organic interaction to actually earn a meeting.
4 to 6 months. That requires so much patience.
It does. But Linda Alice brought in this concept of deal attraction to help, you know, operationalize that patience. She absolutely refuses to reach out cold. She waits until she sees 5 inner yes signals from a prospect.
5. Wow, that requires an incredibly disciplined workflow.
It really does. Reps have to actually track these micro signals. Like maybe a prospect viewed their profile twice in a week or left a thoughtful reply on a comment or attended a company webinar.
So the goal is to wait for the signals, so that when you do send the message, the outreach feels entirely logical to the buyer.
Exactly, rather than an intrusive interruption.
Mm. And when you do finally reach out, the framing is everything. Connor Paulson shared some data that honestly should be plastered on the wall of every sales floor.
Let's hear it.
When your direct messages focus strictly on the buyer's problem, you see a 20 to 30% reply rate.
That's solid.
But when your messages focus on your solution, like your product features, or asking for a demo, that reply rate tanks to 5 to 8%.
Wow. Because buyers are entirely consumed by their own internal chaos, right? They do not care about your software.
Not at all. They care about their missed quota or their broken supply chain. If your message is, I'm talking to a lot of logistics leaders who are struggling with Q3 shipping delays, can I share a framework we've been seeing work? That gets a reply.
But if it says, we sell logistics software, got 15 minutes, it just gets deleted.
Immediately deleted. And Stacey Wong also pointed out that reps are stressing over cold lists when a massive amount of pipeline is already hidden in plain sight.
Really?
They just aren't looking at the people who recently viewed their profile or, you know, new connections they never actually followed up with.
Ah, the low-hanging fruit. But I have a strategic question for you regarding timing.
Sure.
Everyone's inbox is just a battlefield from Monday to Friday. Matt Williams suggests a pattern interrupt. He says, look for the green active circle next to a prospect's name on a Saturday or Sunday morning and message them then.
Oh, that's bold.
Right. I honestly can't decide if that is brilliantly cutting through the noise or just highly intrusive and obnoxious.
It is a massive tightrope walk, to be honest. Strategically, yes, a VP of engineering might actually have the mental space to read your message while having coffee on a Sunday morning.
Right.
But the timing only works if the room is already warm. If you pitch slap them on a Sunday, you aren't just getting ignored, you are getting blocked.
Good point. And JD Garcia provided an incredible data point on what warming the room actually looks like.
What did he find?
He found that when sales reps actively post on LinkedIn about the specific pain points of their prospects, it acts as air cover. It warms the room so effectively that those reps book 43% more meetings compared to reps who stay silent.
43%. That is an absurd advantage.
It really is. It basically means the marketing teams should be running targeted awareness campaigns to the exact same list of 500 accounts that the sales team is actively trying to penetrate.
The alignment between what marketing publishes and who sales targets just have to be airtight.
Completely.
And Zayd Saeli adds one final rule for the inbox, which I think is crucial. Your call to action absolutely must match your ticket size.
Oh, explain that.
Well, if you're selling a $50,000 enterprise contract, you cannot jump into a DM and ask for a 15-minute quick chat to close it. The friction of the ask has to mirror the complexity of the sale.
You have to lead with immense value and slowly earn the right to ask for their time. Okay, so to maintain this entire machine, we're talking appeasing the algorithm bouncer, optimizing the storefront, commenting daily, and executing a 4 to 6 month relationship cycle.
That's a lot.
It is. You need a relentless amount of content. Which brings us to the elephant in the room, AI.
Yes, AI.
With generative tools everywhere, how do B2B marketers maintain this volume without sounding like a swarm of automated bots? Sasha Alexander Kugler voiced a very real fatigue about this. He says the feed is completely overrun with AI evangelists and automated Zapier chains.
And for anyone not deep in the tech stack, a Zapier chain in this context means like stringing together automation tools so that an AI automatically spots a trending post, writes a generic reply, and publishes it without a human ever even reading the words.
It's industrialized spam, and the market is actively rejecting it.
Completely. Benjamin Majerin noted he is so exhausted by it that he intentionally marks generic AI-flavored posts as irrelevant just to train his own algorithm to stop showing him that kind of content.
Because people can spot that overly enthusiastic, emoji-laden ChatGPT wall of text from a mile away.
They really can.
So if using AI as an easy button to just blast out content is dead, how do the top performers actually use it?
Well, Timothy Hughes provided a highly practical blueprint for this. He argues you have to stop treating AI as a ghostwriter and start treating it as a teammate. He calls this building an ecosystem of reference.
Okay, ecosystem of reference. How does one mechanically build that? Because we aren't just typing write a post about B2B marketing into the prompt box anymore.
Not even close.
Yeah.
Building the ecosystem means using features like custom instructions or uploading brand guidelines before you ever ask it to generate a single sentence.
Ah, so you're giving it context.
A ton of context.
Yeah.
You feed the AI your specific ideal customer profiles. You upload PDFs of your past original writing so it analyzes your sentence structure and tone. You essentially teach it your professional identity. And then you write a rough draft yourself and you feed it to the AI as a sparring partner. You ask it, analyze this draft against my target audience of CFOs. Where is my argument weak?
I love that. So it sharpens your original thought. It doesn't invent it.
Exactly.
It's like using AI as the bumpers in a bowling alley.
Yeah.
It keeps your ideas out of the gutter and points them at the pins, but you still have to be the one to physically throw the ball with your own force and spin.
That is a perfect analogy. And Jonathan Levy pointed out something very similar regarding Claude.
What did he say?
He said the chat interface is actually its least powerful feature for professionals. B2B marketers should be using Claude's projects feature to upload their internal strategy documents, linking the AI directly to their actual workflows, rather than just treating it like a glorified search engine.
Because the goal isn't just to produce more words. The goal is to produce content that actually moves the needle.
Yes, and Darren McKee tracks this meticulously. Wow. He argues that we need to completely abandon impressions as a metric.
Oh, controversial. But I agree.
Right. Impressions are a vanity metric given out by the algorithm bouncer. True revenue is driven by three specific actions. Saves, sends, and link clicks.
Because if someone saves your post, they are going to reference it later.
Exactly.
And if they send it in a direct message to their CEO, you've just penetrated the buying committee without making a single cold call.
You've bypassed the gatekeepers, and you only achieve saves and sends by creating what Klaus Ek calls evergreen content.
Content that doesn't expire in a week.
Right. B2B creators waste so much time writing posts that recap an industry event they went to yesterday. Honestly, nobody cares about yesterday's event.
No, they care about their own problems tomorrow.
Exactly. You have to share deep learnings. You have to take a stand with a clear, defensible opinion. A well-researched text that breaks down a fundamental problem in the supply chain will still be relevant and still be generating saves and sends 12 months from now.
You really have to transition from telling people superficial updates to deeply teaching them something valuable.
Which requires vulnerability and actual hard-earned expertise.
Hmm.
You just cannot fake that with a clever prompt.
You really can't.
And, you know, if we pull all of these insights together, the algorithmic shifts, the landing pages, the micro touch points, the warm outreach, it brings up an incredibly important question for you to consider as you build your own strategy.
Okay, let's hear it.
If the algorithm is increasingly prioritizing high quality, long session engagement, and buyers are actively, aggressively ignoring AI-generated spam,
right,
then the ultimate competitive advantage in B2B marketing moving forward won't be who has the biggest tech stack or the most complex automated sequences.
It's going to be something much harder to scale.
It is. The real advantage will belong to whoever has the courage to be the most human, the most vulnerable, and the most radically helpful in public.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, channel marketing, MarTech, go-to-market, and AI in B2B marketing. Thank you so much for joining us. Make sure to hit subscribe, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.